This is Rainbow Six Radio, bringing you
the Next Generation Podcast for talk, news, and information for all things Rainbow Six.
Hey, welcome to Rainbow Six Radio. I am Icy Cat along with Captain, here to bring you all the goodness happening in Rainbow Six Siege, both the game and the community, as we discuss what's going on. If you haven't already, please join us over on our Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. You can find us over there. Be part of the community, ask some questions, share gameplay tips. Go ahead and interact with each other, interact with us. Captain and I will be happy to answer any questions that you have over there. It's a great place to, just kind of have that two-way feedback with us. You can also find us on Twitter. I am IcyCat25 on Twitter, or you can find Captain at Captain's Ghost. That's Captain like Cap Can with a K, Captain's Ghost. We are also on Twitter, so for anybody that wants to check us out, you can. We've got a lot going on in today's show. So since we covered our topics on Ying last week, like pretty much immediately thereafter, there was a sudden Ying nerf. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the new Grand Larceny event. We're going to talk about the controversy surrounding event loot packs and the pricing of them and how we kind of feel about that and what the community is reacting to on that. We also have some interesting things that Ubisoft is promoting with some contest stuff, as well as some changes to the North American Pro League scene, as well as our pro tip and Q&A. Tons of stuff to go over, as usual, packing it all into our weekly podcast. A lot to get to, so let's just kick it right off, Captain.
Let's burn into it. Let's go. Yeah, right off the beginning. We talked about this last week about how intense this Ying buff was, with the Candelas, and pretty much two or three days after this podcast actually came out, they decided that maybe it was a good idea to listen to the community. And now I don't exactly know when on console, but I think it already has happened on PC, but they have gone back down to three Candelas instead of four.
Right. It still retains the other two buffs that she got, being the having extra throwables with the two smoke grenades, which really assists her.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then a little extra damage on the LMG.
Correct. So out of the three buffs that she got, they took one of them back down, where she increased from three to four, and now it's back down to three again. And as you had mentioned, that change has been a hot fix on PC, and I do believe we are still waiting for a console update on that, because it has to go through Sony and Microsoft certification first.
Yep.
But really interesting to see that these changes were announced, that they were coming to the test server. They were played on the test server for, I don't know, a week or two. I mean, the community just was on fire over this. There was so many hundreds of comments between the forum and the Rainbow Six subreddit and the Rainbow Six test server subreddit and Facebook and Twitter, and just hundreds of people saying these are terrible changes, don't do them. And nerfs aside, we're just talking about the Ying revision now. But like everybody was saying, like, you don't need to do this to Ying. There's no reason to do this. This makes her god tier. This, you're trying to reduce Jaeger's effectiveness, and then you're giving this operator six throwables between four Candelas and two smoke grenades. So like you're nerfing Jaeger to address his over pick rate, but you're also giving him more of a reason to be picked with the Ying buff. And like there's so much feedback of why they shouldn't do it. And they were just like, nope, doing it anyway. And then, like, after it was out in the wild for a week, after it had been on the test server,
I don't think it was a week that it was out.
Yeah. And, like, just kidding, guys. Walking that one back.
April Fools. It was intense. It was intense.
I feel like it would be really interesting to see, like, I would love to be a fly on a wall in a Ubisoft meeting. For what exactly, okay, so they push their change live. It goes out. Okay, it's in the wild now. And like within the span of a few days, what happened on their end to be like, oh no, we have to undo this.
Oh yeah. Like I said last week, I am gonna play the hell out of Ying until they fix this, because it is god tier. And I'm sure the backlash for pro players, other people, was probably just overwhelming. And that buff did not need to happen. None of those buffs need to really happen, but especially the full Candelas. And yeah, it's I don't think I've I give Ubisoft a lot of crap, you know, for overdoing things, you know, to the extent of it's why are you doing this? But this is the first time I think that they have done something and immediately took it back. And part of me is like, you know, maybe they're slowly catching on that they should listen to the community a little bit more, or maybe they're just like, yeah, we totally screwed up on this one.
Well, it's interesting because like they had the feedback before they ever did it.
Right.
And that's why so many people were mad. We're like, what is the purpose of your test server if you're just going to do whatever on the test server anyway, regardless of what the feedback is? Isn't the point of the test server to be like to try something and be like, oh, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea. And like all of the stuff that they were testing, like I would say probably like 80% of it, people were like, this is terrible. And they just did it anyway. So, you know, a lot of people are like, why do you even have a test server? Like if all of our feedback is irrelevant. And then clearly, you know, now as a community, and like, I'm not saying this, but like a big swath of the community is, you know, a big chunk of the community is kind of saying like, we told you so. So
yeah.
It's like an interesting position to be in for sure. So we also have a lot of things going on in the game that have changed with this new special event that has come out. That has been a really interesting thing to see because, the special events tend to be hit or miss, right? Since we started doing them, we've had some good ones. I mean, everybody's opinion is going to be subjective, but like, I kind of thought like the Rainbow is Magic event was kind of cool.
Absolutely.
As a limited time event, like it would have driven me nuts if it was any around any longer, but just for like the 2 weeks there, I was like, yeah, you know, that's cool. What I really liked about it was like, okay, it was kind of stupid that it was like kiddish and magical and whatever, like all the rainbow stuff and whatever, but like, I love the creativity. I saw the amount of creativity the development team had just explode with that one. Like, the fact that the plane was a toy plane on the floor of kids' bedroom and the environment map was no longer an airport. It was, like, a gigantic-sized kids' bedroom to match the scale of the airplane. How insane was that?
Right, absolutely. And the fact that they had so many decals on all of the walls, like those flowers, and if you like shot them or meleeed them, they would change. And
it was like cool stuff too, like when Sledge would impact the floor and there'd be like little cartoon stars that would come out with the debris, or like the reskinned hostage being Mr. Bear, or the narrator voiceover that went with it. And like, and again, I understand that a lot of people play that event. They're probably like, that was a stupid event for a variety of reasons. But like the amount of stuff that they just like experimented with and tried, you know, having a drone skin and having barricade skins, and like, it was just, it was cool to see them get playful with it, you know?
Absolutely.
But then you go to stinkers like the Wild West Showdown.
Yeah.
And again, like, these are all subjective, right? Some people might be like, I love that of it. But to me, I played it like for a half an hour and I was like, yeah, no need to do this the rest of the time the event is up again. It was just kind of lame.
It really is kind of like a preference kind of thing for sure.
Yeah.
And I actually, you know, kind of going back to the Grand Larceny event, like, I'm actually not a person who enjoys playing with shotguns. Like, that's just not my style, but I can't get enough of this.
Yeah.
I cannot get enough of it.
It is so insane. So, I mean, let's just talk about our initial impressions because so we record the show on a Wednesday and, you know, it usually gets put out probably by, you know, Thursday afternoon at some point. But, so when we record the show on Wednesday, yesterday was the day that the Grand Larceny event launched. And we played it for the first time yesterday. And just like, I mean, what was your initial reaction to like actually getting into the game?
So, okay. You know, we are in matchmaking for, you know, a couple of seconds, whatever, and it launches. And, you know, I'm looking through all of the different operators that you can do and the new like uniforms. And it even like kind of how elites have their own kind of profile pick now. Mm-hmm. These new like the 10 operators that have, you know, headgears and uniforms for this event have their own special like kind of profile frame thing. And they look super vintage and it's super cool.
It's almost like an art deco framing on those pictures.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. And then it starts. You know, you pick your location and everything, and then the amazing just begins. Like, they have a cutscene intro. A cutscene intro. And go.
To be fair, most of the events that they've done in the last year have. Like, I know the last one did.
The last one.
Doctor's Curse had one. Was Doctor's Curse maybe the first that did? I don't know. But they've done some intros in events before. But this one with Hibana and Maverick rolling up like Bonnie and Clyde was just amazing.
In like old school cars. It definitely, like, to me, it screamed, you know, Prohibition era. We're going in to bust up this, you know, liquor sting kind of thing. And yeah, it was amazing. My jaw dropped when we initially started playing. And even, you know, and I won't go into the gameplay yet because, you know, that's a whole thing too. But then the cutscene at the end of, you know, the victory animation.
Is
also super cool.
I would say that victory animation for the winner's gallery is probably cooler than any other victory animation that's been put into the game. As far as now, I don't want to take anything away from like some cool specific operator ones,
right? You know,
like Thatcher's or Capcans or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just as far as because we've seen in other special events that they've done some custom winner gallery things. And so I'm not talking about a specific operator victory animation, but I'm talking about like an event victory animation. This is hands down the coolest one. And I'll even say it rivals probably a lot of the elite operator animations. Oh,
yes, definitely. So there's a couple elites that will always be number one in my heart, but this definitely goes up in the top five for sure.
Yeah. I don't know what part of it is cooler. The MVP blowing the hole in the wall and stepping forward to join the other four, or the way he just like hits the shotgun at the ceiling and the safe just cracks and falls into the floor. Like, I don't know which part is cooler.
Right. I think the entire thing just in general is pretty dope. We should go into all the different shotguns, because that was kind of interesting. That threw me for a loop too, because not all specific operators use their said shotguns.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I don't have a list of like what every single available shotgun is, but like, you know, you've got your pump actions. So there was what's the name of the one the SAS uses? Is that the 1095 maybe?
I think so.
And then there's the whatever the SAS shotgun is. And then there's the Echo and Hibana's Supernova.
Yeah.
Frost has her Super 90. Then we've got the 612 HD or SD, I'm sorry. What else is in there? The SGCQB, which is the GIGN shotgun. Ella has her automatic shotgun. Forget what that one's called. Let's see what else is in there. Oh, the FBI M1014 solid shotgun. The SPAS 12 is in there. There's just a lot of good shotguns, but they
different shotgun for every person.
They behave so differently from each other. Yep. Like, I noticed some distinct differences when using various operators. It's like, oh, I would maybe not want to have a shotgun that fires this slowly or has this limited ammo capacity or whatever it might be. Or maybe like this one fires a little too fast. I'm kind of like looking at Ella's a little bit, where it can get a little crazy with the recoil control when you're really spamming it.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes I would find myself in situations where I'm like, oh, the choice of operator defines, cause you can't pick your weapon. It's not like you can pick between this primary and that primary. Like there isn't, like, this operator has this gun, period, done.
Yep.
And so like, I found myself really thinking like, are these selections I'm making, do I need to change them? Because the importance of how that gun responds in those firefight situations is so important.
Yeah.
You know, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. And it actually was kind of cool because, you know, it's just like all the other events, you don't really have a lot of time, like a prep phase. You know, it's just like the game starts and you're going. And, you know, as a defender, you only get one reinforcement. Everyone still gets their secondary gadget, but you don't get a secondary weapon. All you get is a shotgun, which I thought was actually kind of cool, too. And it really seemed just like the style of this game and like how fast things are going and how everything is essentially destructible. You know, they're very much so putting into the like you aren't really going to be using your abilities. You aren't really going to be using your gadgets. You're just blowing the hell out of everything. And that was kind of cool. But yeah, it's one of those things that like what is more important, speed or armor? And this is definitely a speed game. So, you know, taking those two speed or one speed or two speed or three speed operators is definitely beneficial for sure.
And I tried making some selections based around that theory of like, well, it seems like having a heavy armor operator is really not too much of a benefit in this game mode. And even a two speed is maybe, you know, it's all right. But really being able to move around quickly is probably a kind of a key thing. But then I also noticed some of that was checked by the shotgun I got. Because like maybe this was an operator that could move really fast, but maybe they
had
were
a slower shotgun.
Yeah, maybe they were saddled with a slower pump action shotgun that you really had to you were kind of punished with those follow up shots when you needed that second shot quick, and it had that second and a half delay before you could fire again, which was enough time to get you killed. You know, so sometimes like it forced your hand to make decisions you wouldn't have otherwise made based on those factors.
Yep. And it also kind of seemed like some of the shotguns were dealing more damage than they normally would be to.
Not only that, but also more environmental impact.
Yep.
It does specifically say in the rules for the event that sort of explains the event. If you press like the button that goes on the expanded rules for what the tab you have highlighted,
sure.
It does say that they've enhanced the destruction aspect of the shotguns.
Yeah.
So yeah, that wasn't just perception. That was really real. It wasn't
well,
just the
next
shotguns
time I'll read
either.
Things. No, but, yeah, it was like even the gadgets and
yeah, because I was using Zofia and I ran up to Garage and you know on the end cap of Garage they have that double wide wooden panel that you can breach into.
Yep.
And I hit it with Zofia in the center. And the hole went from the floor to the ceiling of the entire thing. Normally, it just makes like an impact size grenade, you know, hole. And this was like, nope, it was like twice as big.
Shred the entire thing.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say too, when it comes to operators in this mode, and you had kind of mentioned it as well, is that it's almost like there's no time to use your gadgets in many cases.
In many cases. Unless you're Zofia.
You know, there's some that can be really useful. Like, you know, Ella can be useful for cueing you in when somebody's coming on a flank or something like that. You probably have time to throw out maybe a vault cam or two, you know, maybe putting a Goyo shield right on top of a breachable wall from the exterior is a play you can make quick. But like, I mean, there is no prep phase.
Right.
So it's just like both teams just go rushing at each other as soon as it begins, and that run from the spawn to the building feels longer when you're an attacker, but when you're in a defender, that run from the spawn doesn't feel like hardly any time at all.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
With no prep phase.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. We finally came up with a strategy of, you know, at least reinforcing the garage door. Because that was like a main, you know, entryway. And once we finally started getting the timing down and like getting that, it helped a lot. But there was a couple of times that like I would get to the garage and start reinforcing it. Before I even started holding the reinforce button, it blew open. And I'm like, oh, well, you got yours done. I'm dead. Sorry.
Yeah, like. And because every operator only has one reinforcement panel on defense instead of the normal two. And there's barely time to put up the one.
Yep.
You know, so it's pretty
insane. Like, you can't make a mistake at all. You need to know exactly what direction you're spawning in, and then you need to go from there.
Right, because there's really no point in reinforcements in this game mode for the most part, because you don't have enough time to deploy them properly, and you don't have enough of them to fortify a site. And since everything is destructible in the building anyway, it doesn't matter. So really, the strength of reinforcements that I see are about the only real solid use of them is to create those exterior breaches. So you have the one on garage, you have the one off of dining room, and then on the second floor, you have that one off of office.
Yeah.
I don't know that the one in the basement's super important, because you have to drop them to the basement before you can make much use of that. I guess in the plays that we had, it seemed like they just rushed the ground level. So it was the garage and the dining room ones that were the most important, and then office seemed like it was a strong second candidate.
Yep.
So, like, it kind of seemed like if you're going to use, if you're going to bother at all, those are kind of the places to use them. Otherwise, there's just not enough time to really do anything proper with them.
Mm-hmm. And that's, it was kind of nice, you know, just being able to go in and destroy everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was nice that they at least give you one. You know, to if this is something you want to do, cool, but this game mode is more so meant for destruction.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. Okay, let me start by asking you what you think. What did you think when we first got in there, when you saw the scale of just how much you could destroy and how you could use that to flip between levels and drop safes and like all that stuff? Like, what did you think of that, considering that's so much different than how you normally play the game?
I lost my mind. It was so cool. It was so cool to see, you know, everything. Literally all you have to do is like shoot your way through whatever you want to do. And it was so fun. I think we maybe only won half the matches we played, but I didn't get annoyed at all, like dying. I was just like, this is so fun, I don't even care what's going on. I will say though, the first game, I'm pretty sure I breached in somewhere on the second floor and fell all the way down to the basement and was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, that was pretty insane. I do remember watching that on your kill cam.
But yeah, I mean, I think it was really, it was awesome. You know, this is one that I can really get behind. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now, I think though that it does make a good case for why they abandoned this model in the beginning. Because last week we were talking about how in the E3 2014 demo, they showed that that was how you could play the game originally, was you could just open breach wherever on the floors and ceilings. And so they showed that in the E3 2014 demo, they open breached on living room and dropped in on the defenders in weight room below it. There was no crossbeams. There were no hatches. It was this open destruction model, same way. And I think that this mode kind of showcases the disaster that the game would have turned into had they not switched to a hatch model.
Yep.
Instead of the open destruction model for floors and ceilings. I mean, like, can you imagine, based on our experiences of playing this special event, like, just the frag fest that this game would have turned into?
Oh my god, yeah. I don't think I would be playing this game still if this was like an all-time thing for all maps and modes. Be like, All you're going to do is just literally shoot out every floor, and, you know, whatever floor you come in through, you're just going to fall into the basement and die.
Yeah. But it is hella fun for an event like this.
Absolutely. This is, I will say this, and the only other event that I can say for this was the quarantine one, but I feel like I could play this for more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe not much more, like maybe a month, but like this is really fun.
Yeah. As I was saying before, I think that there's some events, like I'm looking at Wild West Showdown, for instance, or Doctor's Curse kind of as well, where I could, you know, like, okay, I played it few matches. That's all I need. I don't really need to get back into this at all. This is something where I can see where, like, I'm going to play it a lot throughout its entire duration of being available. And when it's gone, I'll even miss it.
Yep.
But I think that's subjective to everybody, because I'm sure there's people that probably, like, can't stand it too. You know,
oh,
I mean,
for sure.
You can't please everybody with everything, but
exactly.
It's just so insane. And it really, like, I feel the nostalgia hit when I play old Hereford layout.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I miss this map so much. I wish they would bring it back. God, please someday bring back the map. Like, I don't care. You can have Old Hereford and New Hereford at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. And yes, it won't appear in ranked. It'll just be in casual and customs. I don't care. Just please bring back Old Hereford.
It is a really nice nostalgia. And, you know, I know we were talking about how, you know, you wish they had the old layout of it besides just the blueprints. But I actually wasn't too upset about how this looked. I
didn't hate it, but I do still kind of want the old look.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm just like, when I initially heard, you know, they're using the new Hereford skin on the old Hereford bones, I was like, this is going to look really weird. But I feel like they did a pretty good job meshing it together.
They did. Let me also throw out there, though, that it probably doesn't have enough time to really sink in how bastardized it is.
Because
when the game plays, it's just like, and everything's shooting and exploding and falling and bleh. You know, and it goes so fast that it's not like you really have time to spend a 3-minute round, you know, playing and like you can't play an anchor position in that mode. What is anchoring in a mode where the objective drops through floors all the time?
You know?
So you don't really have time to kind of take it in. Which is fine. Like, it's insane. It's fast. It's CQB. It's nuts. It's like, I love it, but
it's Roamer's paradise.
Yeah.
Just, you know, watch your footing. Let's go into a little bit of the gameplay. So what exactly is the event? Like, what's the objective?
So there's five saves that are located on the map. And they seem to have some potential variation on exactly where they appear. It looks like there's sometimes it'll be in one spot versus another or whatever, but there's always five of them. And offense has to capture three of the safes. And it goes pretty fast to capture a safe. It's faster than putting down a bomb diffuser. Way faster. When you're on defense, you get the chance to respond to that by hearing, you can hear the little, like, the mechanical ratcheting of the dial being turned. But because it's so fast, it's almost, by the time you hear it, it's almost too late to do anything about it. It's really quick.
Yeah, I would say it's probably, what, like a 3 to 5 second, maybe even 2 to 3 seconds of doing the dial to break the safe.
Yeah, I'd say 3 to 5 is somewhere in there. I haven't timed it out exactly, but it's fast. It's real fast.
It is really fast.
And so you can use the destruction, you know, completely to your advantage. You can use that either on offense or defense. The safes are objectives that can be moved in a way in that you can blow out the floor underneath them and drop them down a level. And that's a somewhat advisable tactic because you can kind of consolidate your objectives onto, like, the same floor. And you don't have to worry too much about things that way as opposed to being so spread out. But some of the safes will spawn on stone or brick flooring that you can't drop out from underneath it because it's not on wood. So then, like, you'll have some of those that it's just like, well, that is a spot where you can't do anything about that particular one or something. But the rounds go incredibly fast because there's no prep phase and it's just insane.
Yeah, I would say some of those rounds were like over in, you know, like a minute and a half.
I had one round that I captured and I put it on my video kind of explaining the event where, like, basically we ran in. I was Jackal. We ran in. I used his ITA 12L shotgun. I dropped two safes that were right in that first dining room area. Like, one was in dining room and one was in music room,
mm-hmm.
Or piano room. And I think I dropped the dining room one and somebody else dropped the piano room one. And when we dropped down, I threw a smoke grenade. So, I mean, like, basically, like, the way this plays out, right? Rushed that wall, boom, shotgun, ran into the wall, boom, shotgun, hit the safe, it dropped down. Somebody else ran into the next room, boom, dropped that safe down. That took all of 10 seconds at the most. And then when we dropped down, I threw a smoke grenade on my safe and a smoke grenade on the second safe that would be in the room next to it. And I disarmed my safe, blew a shotgun hole to connect the rooms, and did the next safe another 10 seconds. So we're like 25 seconds into the round maybe. And then somebody else got a third one somewhere. Round over, one. It wasn't even 30 seconds.
And I think also that in part is also why it's so fun. Because it, you know, there's definitely those times where you're playing an event and you die really quickly, and then Road to SI, you know, there'd be times where like I would, someone would run out and kill me right away, and it's like, all right, well, now I have to wait like up to 2 minutes or something to start all over. And
well, this interesting thing too is there's no spawn peeking in this mode.
Right. Exactly.
I had somebody try to spawn peek me, and it was hilarious because at the range they were trying, it just tickled me. Like, it took like three or four points of damage. It did nothing.
Yep.
You know, and I was like, haha, you can't, you know, because they don't even have a sidearm that they can switch to for that longer range.
It's just the shotgun. Yeah.
So
yeah, the drop. I'm sure that they've just with everything else probably intensified the drop off of those shotguns too, because everything is so close range.
Mm-hmm. This, though, is why I really enjoy the medium to small maps that are in the game.
Definitely.
Because they're more intense for the firefights. The CQB nature is way more viable. I don't have to worry about some long haul that's reaching across a third of the length of the map because it's maze corridors, and this is an extremely long hallway, and my shotgun at one end of the hallway is going to do nothing.
Yep.
You know? I don't have to worry about that. In medium to small maps, these kinds of CQB tactics become more viable, where you have that shorter range. Yes, shotguns have high damage fall off, you know, where it won't do a lot of damage beyond a certain point. But it's like you need to have these small to medium maps to sort of embrace the nature of that. Or some of the SMGs that maybe have, you know, like jittery scattered recoil, like, you know, Kaid's SMG or Mute's MP5K has some kind of, you know, jittery recoil. Or even attacker ones where they switch, you know, like when Hibana has, she switches to her secondary, the Bering SMG as her secondary, like that becomes more viable because it's really jittery, you know, or if somebody uses the SMG 11 or the SMG 12, these are more jittery kind of recoil guns, and they're far more viable in these more CQB nature maps that are either small to medium size, and Old Hereford is definitely in that small to medium size category. And so, like, again, all that CQB stuff becomes way more viable. And to me, that's a lot more fun.
For sure. So I got to ask you, were you able to drop a safe on someone's head?
No, that did not happen yet. I'm sure at some point it will.
Yet is the key word. I will say there was a couple of times when we were playing, and I think this is actually a really cool tactic, and it's, you know, I think it's hilarious when it happens. When you're on defense and the safe is above you and someone is trying to crack it and you shoot the safe out from under them.
I haven't done that one, but what I have done is I've blown a hole over the top of somebody cracking a safe and shot them from above.
Yep.
I've done that one a couple of times. But, you know, again, like all of this stuff is so like fast-paced and all over the place that it's just a matter of inevitability before I do, you know, do those things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
it'll happen tonight. It'll happen tonight for sure.
Probably, yeah. So
how many times did you fall to your death?
I didn't.
Oh, right. It was just me.
I think you only did like once, right? Or was it twice?
No, it was a couple of times. Oh. It might have been three times. One time, I think either you or your son was going to revive me, but then you killed whoever and we won. And then one of them, I was the last attacker and I thought I was like running and dropping into the second floor from third floor. And I dropped all the way down to first floor. And then the first one was just the first game. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Mm. Okay. So another aspect that we haven't talked about yet in regard to this event is the new loot packs that come with this.
Yep.
And there's a lot of controversy that kind of goes along with all of that. One thing that is really kind of interesting is that people are saying, so there's like two sides of this, right? You know, people are saying, well, you know, I mean, how can you defend that you have to pay, you know, like $100 to buy all of them? I don't know. Is it actually that much?
I was looking, and I think it's around 70.
Is it really?
I think it's actually around 70.
That's insane.
It is insane. Okay. That's more than the game costs.
Yeah. Yeah. But then other people are like, well, I mean, you don't have to buy them. They're cosmetic, right? It's not like they give you an added feature in the game that you wouldn't have otherwise had. It's just a uniform or a headgear or whatever. But it's not like you gain any kind of special advantage by doing it. There are some camouflage patterns in the game that do kind of give you an advantage. Like if you get an all black one, and there are actually a couple of all black ones in the event, but you can get all black ones other ways. Or there's like the Ember Rise camo skin was kind of one that was noted for sort of because it's like really muted browns with a bit of green. And so it like tended to blend into a lot of map environments, especially like ones like Villa. So sometimes a camo can be, I don't know, just very effective. But this isn't necessarily the case with these. And, you know, so it's like you don't have to get them if you don't want to spend the money. Nobody's like making you do it. You can play the event entirely for free, still participate. You know, and they do give you two or one free alpha pack. Now, there's an interesting change with that because special events in the past would give you one. Everybody would get one free alpha pack right off the get go. Like you didn't even have to do anything. You'd sign in. The event was live. You got a free alpha pack for the event.
Yep.
They didn't do that this time. So that's a change. They do also have the community challenge things. I think they've got one up there now, but it also sounds like there might be one more coming a little bit later, like maybe next week. But right now it's like you get 20 kills in the event and you'll get a free event alpha pack. But that's
only if Ubisoft, you know, tracks your kills.
Right. And the it's not tracking properly. Like when we played, I got at least over a dozen kills within the span of an hour, at least, if not more. And it said I only got 5. And I know both you and my son were playing and said that you guys weren't, Like it wasn't showing your accurate kill counts either for the challenge.
Yeah.
And then you go online and you see everybody else is complaining about it too. So it wasn't just us, or it's not just Xbox or just PlayStation or just PC. Like it's, you know, everybody's kind of experiencing this issue. Yeah. So clearly there's a bit of an issue with that they used to for a special event, give you a free alpha pack. Now they've taken that away. There's a way to earn a free one, but it's not tracking properly. And that kind of looks bad.
A little bit.
And then, as you said, like if you buy the entire collection outright, it's more than the cost of the game.
Yep.
And then, so then, you know, let's look at the other side of the coin is that they do offer the alpha packs for the event. You can buy them with renown.
Yep. And this is, well, I can't remember. Did you say you could buy special event alpha packs with renown in other events too?
Yeah, they started it was either last season's special event or maybe the special event before that. It hasn't been for all of them the whole time they've been doing it. It used to be only rainbow credits.
Right.
And this is not the first special event that they've done it in, but it's kind of newish. Like they've only done it maybe one or two events before this one. So you can buy with renown, but like, and I don't have the game open in front of me right now to see what it is, but I think it's sort of an expensive amount of renown.
Like, it is.
What is it, like 12,000 renown for like one pack or something like that? Or
yeah.
And then there's like 31 packs in the collection. So like that's a way to get a couple,
mm-hmm.
but probably not, you know, anything substantive.
But that's also another thing, like all the other events, you know, I feel like there weren't this many packs.
You know, I feel like they probably were like 25 to 30-ish. I feel like it's about average.
Okay. Fair enough.
Maybe I'm wrong, but.
But I guess maybe the way that I'm looking at it, because you actually are probably right, but I think the way that I'm looking at it is because there are actual like 30 uniform type things and weapon skins as opposed to like charms. Because usually, like in the other events, like the charm to skin and like uniform headgear, the ratio is way more when it comes to charms. But this one, there's only one charm.
Which I like to see. I'm not a big charm person. I always chase the uniforms and headgears because to me, like changing the way I look is just way more interesting than a charm that you can only see on a kill cam if, you know, it's used against you. So I always like changing the way I look in the game. So uniforms and headgears are awesome to me. And the fact that there's 30 of those between the weapon skins and headgears and uniform skins versus the one charm, I like that ratio.
Definitely. And I will say this charm is actually pretty badass. It's the so like an old school Tommy gun taken apart in a guitar case. And that, I mean, that just spits, you know, 1930s prohibition. Yeah. And that is so cool.
And a lot of the skins are really cool. Like, yeah. I love, like, warden style headgear and uniform. Like, that's so cool. Or, like, the Wamai with the, you know, like,
newsboy hat.
Yeah. Or, like, the Maverick blue collar thing. Like, I mean, like, I've seen some actually, like, really nice skins for what's offering. But they're just so expensive.
They are.
In fact, I saw somebody online, they were posting like they were getting all meta about it. And we're like, what if the alpha packs are so expensive for the event because it's the Grand Larceny event and they're ripping you off as the theme of the event?
That's funny, actually. I like that. I'm bored. Conspiracy theorists unite.
So there's like funny. This divide, right, where people are getting upset over how much they cost, how expensive they are. And again, there are, you know, there's a way to do a challenge to get a free one. They don't give you the free one off the bat that everybody used to get. You can buy them with renown, but they're very expensive. So that's probably only a legitimate pathway to maybe a couple of them. So really, if you want content, you're going to be paying for it at these overpriced fees. And then there's the whole RNG factor. You don't know what you're getting, which is it has always been a problem for me. And in fact, I think probably for most people. I've always been of the opinion that the consumer should always know what they're getting for their money. Like, I don't mind the alpha packs that you get in the game being random because you're not spending money, like actual cash on them. That's an in-game thing. But if I'm going to buy a bundle pack in the shop, I know my $5 or $7 or whatever gets me this bundle pack containing these items. Like, I know my money equals this content, right?
Yeah, definitely. But
the whole RNG crate concept, and I understand it's popularized in other games, like Call of Duty and, you know, other games do it too. But that doesn't mean it's a good thing for the consumer.
Right.
What do you think about that?
So it's, I also agree. Like, I think the whole RNG thing is ridiculous. And actually, I just pulled up on just the regular Rainbow Six subreddit. Someone posted, Toxic R6 Siege posted, over 70 effing dollars for the Grand Larceny packs. Are they effing insane? Why the F are cosmetics more than the cost of the entire game when it first released? I'll tell you why. It's because people bought previous event packs and they're trying to see how much cash they can milk from the sheep. And then he goes on to say, and you're not even guaranteed to get the ones you want, which makes these pack skins to gambling, which last time I heard was illegal for minors to participate in.
Oh, there's a whole controversy on that. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of state legislators in America that are trying to get stuff like that passed. There's other European countries. I forget what country it was in Europe, but like they've outright banned concepts like the RNG loot crate, you know, as like defined as actual gambling. Other countries I think have as well. And I don't know what Ubisoft does in those countries. Do they just not offer the event in those? Or the alpha pack collections in those countries, or I don't know what they do, but
yeah, I don't know. And it's, you know, it is kind of one of those things, like, and I guess this is slightly different, but kind of leaning into this, how, you know, there's so many different games out there that's like pay to win kind of stuff. And obviously this is just cosmetics, so it's different, but, you know, you spend X amount of money for different, you know, skins and stuff like that. One of our friends that we play with, he plays a couple other games and spends a hefty amount of money to make, you know, his characters look badass. And yeah, they look badass, but it's like, you know, $20 a character, and it's, you know, that all adds up eventually. And it's, yeah, you know, it is kind of one of those gambling things, because it's addicting. You know, it's like, I want to get this one uniform, I want to get this one headgear, I want to get this one skin. And you just continue to throw money until you get what you want. And, you know, sometimes it's like, yeah, I can just grind and get some renown and get all the credits, or get all the packs that I want. Or it's like, yeah, I could just, you know, drop $70 and not have to deal with it. And, you know, they damn well know what they're doing. It's, you know, I don't like it, I don't appreciate it, because it, you know, it is kind of, you know, treating us like we're sheep or whatever. But, like, you know, I understand why they're doing it, because that's how they make money.
Right.
But, like, at the same time, it's like, I want 5 of these characters, 5 out of the 10 that you have. Let me just buy them.
Yeah. And, well, you know, and I guess, like, I don't know, I'm part of the problem too. Right. Because, like, I got the, so I had excess rainbow credits from a previous time already. Yep. On the game, right?
Yep.
So I spent those to get the first, I don't know, what was it, like?
I think you bought a 4-pack.
Because
I think both of us bought a 4-pack.
Right, yeah, away. A 4-pack. And then I bought an individual 1-pack with just Renown.
Yeah.
So that was 5. And then I think I actually had enough to buy a second one with just Renown. So I wound up buying 6 total. So 2 for free, mm-hmm, with Renown, and then 1 with a 4-pack bought with rainbow credits that I already had on the game in reserve.
Yep.
So I opened up all of those, and I got some cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the completionist thing kicked in, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I got the Maverick blue collar uniform, and I'm like, oh, that's so cool, but I want the headgear that goes with it, and I didn't get it. So, like, ugh, okay, I'm going to buy another pack. So I bought another, I think it was a 4-pack.
Yeah.
And I managed to get it. And I'm like, okay. But, like, I had to go into the actual shop and add some actual credits.
Yep.
Do the extra 4. And then, so with that 4-pack, I got what I wanted. And then, so, mm-hmm, you know, there's still a bunch of content I don't have from the collection, but I don't care. Cause like I got the Maverick thing I wanted, and, I was lucky enough to get the Warden stuff. And so I'm like, okay, you know, I don't even play Warden. Why do I care? But, it just looked cool.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the one time that you randomly pick someone or something and you get Warden, at least now it'll look cool.
Yeah. Not that the suit and tie didn't look cool before, but.
But, like, some of them, and this is also smart on their part too, some of them just do not mix with the, you know, standard or what other, like, uniforms you've bought for the operators. Like, I got the Wamai headgear, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. But I can't use it because I didn't get the Wamai uniform. You know, however, Warden looks really good with just the headgear and the suit and tie.
Yeah.
That's a slick look for him. You don't necessarily need the uniform because he looks good just with the hair, but, you know, not all the other operators are the same.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, like I said, maybe does that make me part of the problem too? Because it's like, oh, I just got to finish this one more thing, and I bought another 4-pack. Does that make me part of the problem? I don't know. Maybe. But the way I choose to look at it, okay, this is the way I choose to look at it. You can disagree. Other people can disagree. It's fine. It's whatever. any statement that comes with a disclaimer like that, right?
you sound very defensive right now.
not really. But
I'm going to go right ahead and disagree already.
the way I look at it is that this stuff is all cosmetic. And we don't need any of it. Right. So the choice to pursue it is a choice. And it's one that I choose to make knowing that I don't need any of it and agreeing that, yes, it is insanely overpriced. It is. But by contributing to it, I am supporting the development of the game going both now and in the future, because the game doesn't even sell for $60 anymore. It's like $30. Like
maybe even 30.
Yeah, and it goes on sale all the time. There's like 60% off sales or 75% off sales in the Ubisoft store. So like they're not getting full value for the game when it first came out as what they had originally gotten for it to continue forward. And how do you continue to support a game over a planned 5 to 10 year life cycle? We're already at year 5. So, you know, they're still committing to that 10 year life cycle. So how do they support 10 years worth of funding a development team to keep putting out all this new content, both for special events and new features and new operators and map reworks and whatever it might be? You know, they've got to pay those developers and programmers something somehow. And the way you do that is by things like this. So yes, it's overpriced for what it is. Yes, I hate RNG, but I also know that this is how the game gets supported. And so I kind of go into it with eyes wide open. What do you think?
Part of me agrees. Part of me disagrees. Now, I think if it's your money, you can do whatever the hell you want, you know, and it exactly because it is cosmetics. It's not like giving you a major advantage in the game, even if, you know, it's some sort of camouflage that makes you blend in a little bit more. I'm sure a pro leaguer is going to complain about it. They're going to take the entire, you know, operator out and, you know, do a hot fix, just, you know, consulate and everything. But I think that if you have the money and that's what you want to spend it on, I don't see a problem with it because, you know, that's what makes you stand out. Just like kind of how we talked about like the Black Ice skin and stuff like that. It means that you played this game at this milestone and this is your reward for doing that. Mm-hmm. Totally on board with that. You know, if you're a person like me that can't justify spending $70 to buy everything.
Oh, I sure didn't buy everything.
Oh, right. I know. I'm just saying if you're a person like me that, you know, can't justify spending money on it and, you know, you're willing to play the gamble, then whatever. What I do have a problem with is when kids play these games and they are just like, you know what? I have my parents' credit card on my account and I'm just going to buy this and not tell them. That's the stuff that like I get worried about when they start talking about, you know, things like this, because that's an easy way to make money. But, you know, that's not the game's problem. That's that person's problem.
Okay. So I got some opinions here on what you just said.
Strike a nerve there? Is that what just happened?
No, I wouldn't say strike a nerve, but so I have something that I'll say something passionate about, and then I'll say something that's just kind of interesting opportunity about what you just said in both directions. Yeah. So as the listeners know, for those of you that follow the podcast, my son does play the game with me. You know, he's 13 years old. He's old enough that he can play the game with us. And he's pretty good at it. And I know what it's like to have a child that plays the game and worrying about security content and access and things like that. It is a legitimate concern. To your point, if a kid racks up money on their parents' credit card that's tied to the account, that's a problem. And I will say, why? Why would you tie a credit card to the child's account and give them open access to it? So I can't speak for how PC or PlayStation works. I don't play on those platforms, but I play on Xbox. And yep. Xbox parental controls, in the parental controls, has a way for me to say, do you want your kid to be able to purchase microtransactions in games with permission, giving you notifications? Do you want to lock them out of it entirely? Do you want to give them an allowance of $5 or $10 or whatever that they can use and it refresh. Like, there's these options of parental controls. So any parent that's like just blank authorizes their kid's access to the account, as far as the credit card that's associated with the account, like, you need to be more hands-on in your role as a parent. Like, don't just be like, hey kid, here's the access to the credit card tied to your account. Have fun. Trust you. You know, it's like, any parent that does that, I guess I would say, like, maybe you need to take a second look at what you're doing. Cause I think that's like, if you get shot in the foot with that, you shot yourself in the foot with that. You can say the kid did it, but you shot yourself in the foot with that.
Touche. Touche.
So that's the part I'm passionate about. Now, the part that's interesting that speaks to an opportunity about that is, again, as a parent with a son that plays this game, we had this conversation. So my son really wants the Zofia Elite when it comes out. It should be coming out kind of sort of soonish. And so he wanted to have some money and do some chores to set aside some cash for that so that I could purchase that for him and add it to his account. Like, cool, yeah, we'll do that. He's already done some things toward it, and he's going to continue to do some more things toward it until it gets released so he can get it. And when this event came out, he's like, oh, I want these packs. And he said, can I use the money I was going to do for the Zofia Elite for these packs instead? And so then we had a conversation, and I said, well, first of all, know that you're not going to be sure of what you're getting. Like, if you want to spend, you know, I think the Zofia Elite kind of equates to like 20-ish bucks. So I said, if you want to spend like 20-ish bucks on alpha packs for this event, you can do that, but you don't know what you're going to get. You might not like it, or you might get parts of what you like and parts of what you don't. But I said to him, this is an interesting opportunity for you to think about exercising patience.
Yep.
Because you can take the time to wait for the thing you knew you wanted originally, but it's going to be further out. It might be a few weeks yet. And you need to exercise your willpower over, do you want to wait for that bigger thing you had your eye on then or in the future? Or do you want this thing that's more immediate right here with instant gratification now?
Right.
And I use that as a teaching tool to kind of say to him, you know, this is a situation you find yourself in. What are you going to do with it? And I'll, if you want to spend the money on the alpha packs, I'll do that. If you want to spend the money on the Zofia Elite, I'll do that. Either way, you're earning the money by, you know, working it off and doing the chores and what have you, but you're not going to have enough for both. You need to make a decision. And here's an opportunity for you to kind of learn about what the adult world is of, like, saving up for something you want, but being distracted by a new pretty shiny thing right away before you get it.
And what did he do?
It seems like he's going to wait for the Zofia Elite, but he may also angle a little bit to maybe do some extra chores even above and beyond to maybe get a little bit, at least a couple of the packs now, maybe. So we'll see how that winds up playing. But even that is its own teaching thing, because it's like, okay, you have this budget of $20 for the Zofia Elite that you wanted, and if you want to spend more than that, you don't have more than that, then you have to earn more than that, you know? So it's like, it's this whole exercise thing.
Yeah. I really like what you do with him about having him, you know, do some chores and stuff to make that allowance. So it is kind of like he's earning, you know, the credits that he's getting, which is a really cool, you know, parenting thing.
Yeah.
I don't have kids, so I don't know anything about that. So I'd probably be the one that, like, oh, where did this $70 go? Like, God damn it. but yeah, so there's another kind of new thing, and I think this is actually the first time I've ever seen Rainbow Six do this, but they actually are having a Rainbow Six vintage fashion fan art contest. Have you ever seen them doing that before?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but they have done one or two contests before. Like, they had a design and operator contest, like, 2 or 3 years ago, but I this isn't the kind of thing they do a lot of.
Yeah, and this started yesterday. So I just pulled it up, so I'm going to read it quick. By order of Team Rainbow, it's time to start drawing. If you think you have an eye for fashion and a flair for the creative, then pick up your brushes and tablets, because it's time to give your favorite operator a makeover. Design and create a vintage or historical inspired fashion costume for your favorite operator and share it with us using the hashtag R6Vintage. for a chance to win the complete Grand Larceny collection of over $70. The contest starts at 12 p.m. Eastern Daytime, May 5th, 2020, and will be open for submissions until 12 p.m. Eastern Time, May 12th. So a little over a week. How to enter. And then it just kind of explains more stuff. We can put the link in the...
So is that on the Rainbow Six Facebook or the Twitter or probably both, right?
I'm actually at Ubisoft.com.
Oh, okay.
So basically, yeah, you pick the operator, you draw them, and then you send it to them via Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag R6Vintage for a chance to win. And they say 10 winners for the complete 2020 Grand Larceny Collection. At the end of the contest, we'll select the most stylish and catwalk-worthy outfits to be gifted with the complete Grand Larceny Event Collection. Winners will be selected based on the following. Level of design and style, creativity, and adherence to the spirit of the contest and event.
That's cool.
So, yeah, and then, there's just kind of more details and stuff and official rules and stuff. But, yeah, so I think this is the first time that at least I've seen this, and I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I wonder if they have runner-up prizes for everybody not Sausage.
Right.
Touché. No, I'm kidding.
Per person.
Sausage is one of my favorite Rainbow like community cartoon artists. Yeah, but he draws more of a cartoony style, so I'm sure there's people that can do like actual legit like fashion design drawing and things like that. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I wonder if it would turn into a kind of an opportunity, and like I doubt it, but like it would be cool if like somebody did such a good job that they're like, hey, we want to like work with you to like bring your idea to life in the game. Like that would be cool.
That would be really
cool. I mean, they don't say that they're going to do that in the rules. You know, that's not a promise that they're making at all. But, like, it would just be, like cool if, you know, kind of a thing. So
yeah, definitely. Maybe this is their way of finding new people to join.
sort of an outside-the-box job interview.
Yep.
So you've also been finding out some other stuff that's going on, too, right? Some news on the esports side of things.
Yeah, so we kind of talked about this in brief, I think, last episode, but now it's become official a couple days ago that Rainbow Six is now separating, you know, North America is separating from Canada, and now they're announcing the Rainbow Six North American League.
So instead of, like, North America being just all one big together, now Canada and the rest of the NA are two different things.
Yep.
Okay.
So, I mean, we can also post this because this is a long thing, but basically they're starting for this season, starting in July, I think. Is the first stage. They have the first two seasons of the timeline out. You know, the United States division is what they're calling it. And they have 8 pro teams, Space Station Gaming, TSM, Dark Zero Esports, United, Tempo Storm, Susquehanna Sonics, Disrupt Gaming, and Oxygen Esports are going to be the teams representing the U.S. division. Is there anything about Canada? No, not really. So this kind of goes hand in hand with kind of what we were talking a little bit about that one. I can't remember what team this player is on, but he actually is now in the Canada League. I think that's what it was. He got switched to the Canada League, and because of that, I think either he's out of being on this team or his team like doesn't qualify or something.
I think they lost their placement or something like that because of the redistricting, and it was kind of I don't know. Like, and it's one of those things that we were talking about, that it was like, it'd be nice if they would announce this change like more in advance to say to the team, like, you can wrap up the current season, but then the next season after that, it'll be whatever or something. Yep. But this season's like already pretty much over and like doesn't really give them time to respond, you know? So I don't know. So,
I mean, in a way, cause I mean, you know, this is kind of like a full-time job for them.
Yeah.
You know, this is how they make their money. So like, in a way, you're kind of, I mean, not screwing them out of like an entire year of salary, but you're kind of like screwing them over at a point where, you know, it's even more important to, you know, have funds in the bank.
Well, the people that got redistricted and were impacted. Yeah. By it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. I'm only talking about what, five to seven people or something, but.
Well, I think it's interesting to see the leagues get split up a little bit to countries a little bit more, give us more variety, because right now it doesn't feel like there's like a ton of, like there's individual teams, but like as far as like national representation, it doesn't feel like it's as diverse as it could be, because each of those leagues is made up of so many countries.
Yep.
You know, so it winds up being like the, you know, EU versus NA, you know, and like, okay, you know, now like, you know, Brazil, South America has kind of become, you know, more of a challenger in that. And they're really trying to invest in kicking off the Asian League too now. But again, you know, it's all these like blanket countries. So it's kind of neat to think of it almost like in more in terms of like an Olympic kind of a thing where like, you know, people are representing their country as opposed to like an entire regional section continent. Of the world or something like that. So.
And I think this also is a prime example. And, you know, now that this has come out and I was able to read a little bit of it, I now understand a little bit more how Rainbow Six did become a tier one esport. And I feel like this, you know, as sucky of a thing as, you know, redistricting in the middle of a season, you know, and completely screwing a team over, this is a prime example of how this is growing so much. And it's going to actually, like, in the long run, I feel like this is actually going to make more competition. In a way. So it's going to be even more competitive than it was, because now these pro teams, you know, are going to have to work harder to remain the pro teams in, you know, in Canada or in the US. And I also feel like this is a way that they're going to be able to show more and people are going to watch it more. And now when I said that, I don't think that they are going to remain a tier one esport, this, you know, this separation actually makes me feel like they actually probably are. If that makes sense, that, you know, long worded thing that I just did.
No, that's fine. You know, I mean, I'm all about anything that grows the game. I think that that's a good thing. And if this helps growth in the game, then, you know, more power to them. I just get more concerned about like teams being redistricted out of their own standings and placements. And just, you know, wishing that they would have maybe handled that a little bit better
differently. To say,
you know, hey, this season's almost over. We're not going to do this next season, but then the season after that. So you have a full season to prepare, not just like, hey, we're telling you when the season's already 2/3 over that next season, it's like totally different. And you really have very little time, if any, to react. You know, I just like, I like the change. I just would like to see, make sure that they're doing a little bit better communication with the teams that are affected by the changes. That's all.
Yeah. They could have implemented it better for sure.
Right. And as I mentioned, when we were talking about this story, as it broke last week, that, you know, I don't have the inside info. I wasn't part of the actual conversations. All I know is what the affected individuals were sharing online. And, you know, that's taking it at face value, which may or may not be 100% accurate, you know, so there's a, like a lot of disclaimer to the side of the story on that.
But, right.
I have though seen Ubisoft handle other things like the disbanding of the Xbox Pro League and, you know, the little to no notice that they gave those affected players. And so I have seen Ubisoft do similar things before. So, I just hope that they, in the future, any kinds of changes that impact teams mid-season that they maybe give them more notice, more heads up, more ability to react and respond and work with them a little bit better to facilitate those changes.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of pros, let's move on to our pro tip. I am not a pro, and this may or may not be a pro tip, but we'll do the best we can with it.
That was a beautiful transition.
Wasn't it, though?
For the record.
Absolutely, it was amazing.
It's almost like you've done something like this before.
Could be. I don't know. All right.
Are you the real Icy Cat?
Maybe. Okay. So this pro tip is going to be for the map border. Now, before I've done some pro tips that talked about drone placements or Valkyrie cam placements, this week we are going to get one of each. Surprise. Okay. So one drone spot on border that I absolutely love is this is going to be on the second floor on over by the east stairwell. So this is like where there's that walkway that overlooks the atrium on the second floor outside of that open area by the offices. So at the end of that hallway by the east stairwell, there's a stack of file cabinets there, and you can jump your drone on top of that. Once you do that, look over at the door, and above the door, there's a little light kind of a thing above the top of the doorway. Jump your drone on top of that. From there, you have one more hop onto, it's almost like an emergency lighting electrical panel box thing. And it's right above that, kind of off to the left of that position. From there, you can now turn your drone around and you can see over the top of, so there's like a gap above that wall, and it's usually covered up by like lattice work. That can be shot out, but even if it's not shot out, you can see through it with the drone. So you can see all the way down that hall where the main rotations are through that hallway. But then you can also see from that position anybody that's rotating through that open area. And again, this is the area that is, it's above the first floor teller's location. So that whole open area, it's a common rotation if people are in armory and they're trying to move around. It's common to defend from up above if the objective site is in teller's. It's its own objective room. So there's a lot of use that comes out of that position. And defenders are very unlikely to spot the drone up high like that. So that is the pro drone position. And Captain, you see me put it there every time we play border.
Absolutely.
Always jumping into that position as soon as I can.
Yep.
So three jumps.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It covers a lot of area.
It really does. It really does.
So three jumps and you're into that position. The next spot is a Valkyrie cam spot. So this one is going to be in the security room. If you look in the area where the door comes off of the balcony, not by the armory side, but the other side, there is a section that's got a little half wall and there's a countertop and a refrigerator, right? If you know where that section is. It's just to the side of the door. There's a vending machine on the other side, but on the opposite side, there's a refrigerator. And right next to that refrigerator, there's like a little gap between that and the wooden wall. On the other side of that wooden wall is that open box atrium in the center of the map. If you take your Valkyrie, you can do this with her shotgun or just do it with her Desert Eagle too, because they can punch a big enough hole in the wall. You're going to fire a couple of shots up at the corner of the ceiling. The point here is to just open up a chunk of hole that goes all the way through the wall, and then you throw your Valkyrie cam into that hole. And what happens is you wind up being able to see all of security room that you're in, but then that wall acts as a divider, and now you can see on the other side of it too, and you can see that upper walkway on the second floor. You can also see the entire open atrium area below. You can see anybody rotating up and down on the east stairs, either by going into the walkway up above or coming into it from the bottom on the open atrium. You can also see into tellers through there, and you can see anybody rotating in the area that opens up from the open atrium into more of like the customs inspection workshop area side. Winds up revealing close to maybe one quarter of the entire map with one camera. Yeah. So, pro tip drone spot, pro tip Valcam spot.
It's and I can say without a doubt that those both have helped me significantly in many, many moments. So let's finish off today with the Q&A. This one is from David Rapace.
Is that Rapace?
Rapace?
Depends on how Italian they are. I don't know.
Yeah. When Rainbow Six Quarantine does come out, do you think they should bring back the outbreak mode for a couple of weeks? They spend so much time and effort on it, and it's a very unique mode, offering the chance for attackers and defenders to play together, among many other things, and that made it really special. It costs them practically nothing to do it, and it'll hype up Quarantine and will probably increase the sales of that game, and it'll give players who started playing Siege after Operation Chimera a chance to play it. They could even add operators in the mode that were released after Chimera, like Maestro and Callie, to shake it up a bit. Thanks, and love the podcast. Now, what do you think?
I actually want to hear what you think first. I've got some things to say about this, but I want to hear your opinion.
So I think I actually have a very biased opinion.
Okay.
And that is because Outbreak was hands down my favorite special event. Hands down my favorite. This is a very, you know, the one Grand Larceny right now is a very close to, but Outbreak was by far my favorite. So I think just out of bias, I just want it to be a game mode that I can play whenever I want. So I would love for it to come back for a couple of weeks or days or whatever. I understand why they wouldn't do that. Because kind of like the events are just kind of like a one-time thing. And if they bring it back, does that mean they also have to bring back the alpha packs and stuff like that? And that kind of goes against the whole, here is this special milestone, give us money so you can have mementos for it. And I mean that'll cause all sorts of whatever. But I loved that game mode so much that I would love to play it again. What about you?
For me, okay, I'm going to disagree, but here's why. So when the Outbreak event came out, nobody knew what its point was. It was
right.
Very clear that they had put a lot of resources into it, and then to just take it away after a few weeks was like, it left everybody scratching their head going like, why did you put so much time and effort into this for just a few weeks and then for it never to come back again? Well, then we had to wait a really long stretch of time, and then they announced that there was going to be a new game in the franchise, spinoff of Siege, called Rainbow Six Quarantine. And as of now, that looks to be on target to release holiday of this year. Yep. And we know that it's going to pretty much be what Outbreak was. It's going to be a three-player co-op game. It's not going to be the PvP parts of Siege. It's not going to probably not going to have Terrorist Hunter or anything like it. So it's going to be its own kind of entity. What Outbreak wound up being in retrospect that we didn't know at the time was that it was a test bed to try new features, new technology, new changes to the destruction engine, new things like as far as like the juggernaut alien knocking you back, which they then developed into Nomad's ability. They
right.
said Nomad's ability came from the juggernaut's knockback ability, because it was, people thought that that was so interesting and unique that they turned it into an operator ability, and thus Nomad was born.
Nice.
But it was essentially a test bed for a prototype of a concept. Like, if we wanted to flush this out and turn this into a spin it off into its own game, how would that work? Well, let's put together this prototype and test it out, let the community get their hands on it, see what they think about it. As a prototype, it is not going to be representative of the final product of what Outbreak winds up being. I would bet
right.
dollars to donuts that Outbreak is going to wind up being probably significantly different in terms of, like, I wouldn't even be surprised if the three maps that were available in Outbreak were never seen in the actual Quarantine game. I wouldn't be surprised
right.
at all. In fact, I hope that they don't, because I don't want to feel like I've already played a quarter of the game.
Yeah.
But I feel like if they were to bring back that event, it would distort people's perceptions of what Quarantine was going to be, because a prototype is not representative of the final gameplay. And so it would be like, yeah, you could use this to drum up sales, but it would be like saying, hey, we're coming out with the new Toyota Camry. So in the meantime, here is this little CRX Honda hatchback that you can drive, but they're both cars, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, but one's not like the other. They're totally different. So I don't feel like that would be necessarily a good thing to do for that reason. Now, what I do think would be a good thing to do is definitely have some kind of a pre-launch special event. So what would that be? Maybe season 3 for us for Siege for this year around that time. Yeah. So maybe in season 3 have, so when we get the Chalet rework, have a special event for that month that promotes the theme, that promotes the concept, and not something where it takes Operation Chimera's outbreak and just regurgitates it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not even saying a PvE map experience like that was. Let it still be the normal maps that we have in Siege, but maybe you're playing like Canal, and Canal is infested with like the alien overgrowth on just like the walls and the furniture and stuff.
Right.
Like, it's not changing the game, but it's putting in an aesthetic theme that ties into the event. You know, maybe the secure area canisters look like these special alien bio containers, or, you know,
like
it's still Siege. It's not this PvE concept. It's still the PvP thing. It's in Siege, but the theme ties directly into the content that's coming out. And then like the alpha pack content that you have with that is all designed around that concept and gives you that cool stuff. You know, maybe there's some other things that sort of tie in with the flavor of what's coming out. Definitely push the theme, but I would say repeating the PvE limited time event of the prototype that's not going to be anything at all representative of what Quarantine winds up being is probably a mistake.
Right. I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I still want to play it though, but
now just as an aside,
I see your point.
Just as an aside, we don't know anything specific other than the one teaser trailer they showed us at E3 like a year ago. What are your thoughts on when Quarantine comes? Is that something you're excited for, or are you just kind of like, take
definitely.
It or leave it?
I'm definitely going to buy that when it comes for sure.
Okay.
I will say out of the three Tom Clancy games that I own right now. Well, no, I own four, five. Jeez. The only one that hasn't like severely disappointed me has been Siege. The Division was really fun for a while. The Division 2, in my opinion, was just all of the things that I hated about The Division. Wildlands, Ghost Recon Wildlands, is an amazing, fun game. I love it, but it's kind of repetitive. And then Breakpoint was the beauty of Wildlands and then just everything that I hated about The Division.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the track record is not super great.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, right now I am super excited because of Outbreak, and it was so fun. So I'm really excited for when this comes out, but I'm sure, you know, as time goes on, there'll probably be more trailers. There'll be some gameplay that probably comes out. And my opinion might change down the road, but right now I'm really excited.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
I guess I don't like that it's three players instead of at least like four.
Yeah,
that's a little upsetting, because that kind of, I mean, our like core group is all, we already have issues because there's more people than spots, but like this just like cuts that in half even more.
Yeah. And I know why they're doing it, because they've got the whole horde mechanic.
Yeah.
But that's what drive. That's what makes me so cautious about quarantine, is that Rainbow Six was never Left 4 Dead. Why are they making it Left 4 Dead? Like, I don't get that. I don't like that. And the whole concept of like operators bullet hosing hordes of rushing zombie aliens is just to me like, it's not what I want in a Rainbow Six like campaign based game. I'm still gonna give it a shot. I'm still gonna see what they do with it. But I can tell you right now that Outback is not what I want in a Tom Clancy Rainbow Six campaign game. It isn't.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like that's a good space to stop for this week's show. We've covered a lot of ground, and we will, of course, be preparing things for next week's show. And we hope that you can all join us then. If you haven't already, please do give us a like and a follow. Don't forget, we also post our information on the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit, so you can find everything there for the show. And we do also post these on Facebook and Twitter. Please give us a retweet or a share or anything like that, so that you can kind of let everybody else know about the show if you've liked what you hear here. And until we talk to you with next week's exciting content, this is Icy Cat and Captain, and we will see you next time.
This has been Rainbow Six Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for even more Rainbow Six talk, news, and information.